Gold letters on a blue background read distributed by Buena Vista. Two blue silhouettes of a boy and girl run into the foreground. In gold letters across their approaching shapes, the words Walt Disney Productions presents. A blue screen is filled with white sketched dogs that snarl, teeth bared in pursuit of the children. Gold gnarled letters read, Escape to Witch Mountain. Credits read, starring Eddie Albert, Jason, starring Ray Milland, Aristotle Bolt, starring Donald Pleasance, Duranian. Two black silhouettes of a boy and girl run into the foreground chased by the white sketched dogs. Further credits read, co-starring Kim Richards, Tia, Ike Eisenman, Tony, Walter Barnes, Sheriff Purdy, Rita Shaw, Mrs. Grindley, and Enver Pyle as Uncle Bernay. A turquoise silhouette runs to the foreground. A girl's long hair streams out behind her as she runs from the approaching pack of dogs. Black silhouettes of the boy and girl cross the screen from right to left, then from left to right. The figures run into the foreground and part, revealing a large blue mountain peak emerging from a foreboding mist. The dogs continue to give chase. Music, Johnny Mandel. Director of Photography, Frank Phillips. Screenplay by Robert Malcolm Young, based on the book by Alexander Key. Produced by Jerome Cortland. Executive Producer, Ron Miller. A white bus drives along a road. It has a circular green logo on it reading Pinewoods, Child Welfare Department. The bus turns into a drive passing a sign reading Speed Limit 5, Caution, Children Playing. Tia and Tony sit inside taking in the view and exchange a look. Tia is a pretty long blonde-haired girl wearing a ponytail at the nape of her neck. Tony is a brown-haired, wide-eyed boy. They pass a sign reading Pinewoods, 39 Pinewoods Lane. Through the windows they watch lots of children of differing ages playing together. The bus pulls up outside a large grey stone building. The driver gets out as a friendly white-haired stout lady approaches the bus smiling. She wears a blue check dress and wears a cardigan.
Well, here we are. You're Tony and you're Tia.
Ma'am. Hello, Mrs. Grindley.
Oh, such fine-looking children. I know you're anxious to see your rooms, but first we have some forms to fill out. Then we'll join the others for dinner, all right? Tia. What a pretty case.
Mrs. Grindley examines the silver square case that hangs from Tia's wrist. It has a blue surface embossed with two gold stars. Mrs. Grindley ushers them inside. Later they fill out documents alongside a young gingerhead boy.
It ain't nothing writing out those entry forms. Well, she lays one of those enlightened punishments on you.
And after you watch the 5 o'clock news, you can write a 500-word composition.
Brother.
Tony, what should I put after sports?
Put spectator.
Dump pens out of ink.
I'm finished. You can use mine.
Tia hands over her pen to the boy.
Hey, I lost one just like this when I was coming into this barn.
Tia's had that since Christmas.
Sure she has.
Tony stands up determinedly.
Give it back.
The boy stands, putting the pen in his shirt pocket.
Take it.
And now, children, that wasn't so difficult, was it?
No, ma'am.
Tony, a truck, I want you to wait for me in my office. We'll read this together.
As truck stands, Tia swipes her pen back from his pocket. He leaves.
I keep forgetting what it feels like to sit down. Now then, I know how both of you must feel. Your foster parents are the only parents you remember. And now that they've passed away, you're just a little bit scared.
We love them very much.
Yes, ma'am, we miss them.
You only remember your adoptive name, Malone.
Well, Tia was around 3, and I was 5 when the Malones adopted us.
Did either of you ever receive a birthday card from a relative? Or perhaps a phone call at Christmas?
Tia looks to the distance, picturing a blurred scene of three people struggling in water.
Tia, what is it, dear? You look as though you're remembering something.
No, Mrs. Grinley. I'm sorry.
Why, there's nothing to be sorry about, dear.
Mrs. Grinley pulls Tia close, reassuring her. Children play baseball in the grounds. Truck hits the ball high, drops his bat and runs to first base as Tony races after the ball with a glove on. Tony disappears behind a bush as Tia clutches her head. Tony leaps up unnaturally high, catching the ball, and the children stare.
You're out, Truck!
Truck stares as Tony emerges triumphantly holding the ball. Tia groans, dropping her hands from her head. Truck runs towards Tony.
Nobody can jump that high, Malone. You stood on something.
Truck runs to look behind the bush as Tony joins the other children. Tia looks on nervously as Truck searches but finds nothing. He runs stumbly back to the excited group.
You're just trying to rip me off. I was safe at third. See, there's something funny about this, Malone, and I'm going to teach you a lesson.
Tony looks at Tia.
Tony
shrugs, and as Truck goes to punch him, he leaps backwards in the air, causing Truck to fall. Frowning, Truck gets to his feet. Tony stares at the baseball glove on the ground and it rises into the air, rubbing Truck's face, who struggles.
I got it out, Malone!
The glove becomes a fist and punches Truck's face. Furious, he goes to punch Tony, but the baseball bat rises into the air, blocking his attempt. Tia has a fierce expression as she looks on. Truck backs away, rubbing his hand. As he runs off, Tony walks towards Tia, who stands with her hands on her hips. Her lips do not move at all.
Tony, why'd you do that? You don't think we're going to get away with it, do you?
Now by her side, Tony shrugs, looking back at the stunned, silent group of children.
You see?
Together they walk back to the house. Later in bed, Tia speaks to Tony in her mind.
Tony, you promised me and I promised you. We wouldn't, you know, do the kind of stuff you do with Truck. You remember how it used to be, when we thought it was all funny, like a game, and all the other kids thought we were some kind of freaks or witches.
I know, Tia. We lost all of our friends until we quit doing all the spooky stuff.
You should have let Chuck beat up on you.
Are you kidding? He's got 5 inches and 50 pounds on me.
And you should have made it look like he was only.
I suppose.
Tony, do you hear the dogs?
Both sit up in bed.
No. How far?
Oh, about 20 miles. Big dogs. 6 or 7.
Yeah. I can hear them now.
That's awful far. Even for us. Why are we hearing them, Tony?
I think it means that we're going to see him someday.
The next day, Tia, Tony and other children run downstairs and outside to a waiting bus.
The bus is only later, Mrs. Grinley. We're going to miss the beginning of the picture.
Yeah! I don't see what's keeping them.
Mrs. Grindley goes inside and Truck snatches Tia's case.
All right, Truck. Hey, you guys, want to see something really neat?
That's my star case, Truck.
And you're his sister.
Tony, please, not another fight.
It's your star case, Tia. He might smash it.
Tony approaches Truck.
Give it back to Tia. Now.
If you want, I'll fight you with one hand.
I'll fight you with none.
Come on.
A black cat knocks the case from Truck's hand. Glancing backwards at Tony, Truck runs with the other children towards the bus. The cat jumps onto a branch of a tree overhanging the spot where Tia's case lies. She bends down and picks it up, inspecting it with Tony.
Pinky.
The cat winks.
And Tony and Tia, come on! What's taking you? Come!
The pair run to the bus where Mrs. Grindley ushers them on. Later, the children emerge from the cinema, red letters advertising the picture, Walt Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Tony, across the street.
They look towards a limousine, the chauffeur leaning against it reading a paper.
Big car? What about it? Something's going to happen to it. There's a man. He mustn't get into that car. There he is!
A bald-headed man carrying a briefcase approaches the car. He stops to talk to the driver.
Come on.
Mrs. Grindley is distracted by the other children boarding the bus, allowing the pair to cross the road unnoticed.
Please, sir, don't get in that car.
It's no joke, sir. You see, my sister, well, she gets these feelings. So you mustn't get in the car.
Please, sir.
Children! Children, you know the rules about leaving the group. No? I'm terribly sorry, sir.
That's all right.
Excuse us, please.
Mrs. Grindley steers the children back across the road. Deep in thought, the man watches them go.
I've changed my mind. I'd like to take a walk. Pick me up by the park.
Yes, sir.
The chauffeur takes the man's briefcase and gets in the limo. The man walks away from it, looking at the bus. A yellow tow truck swerves to avoid a cyclist crashing into the limo.
Are you all right?
Yes, sir.
The bald-headed man stands by the car, looking towards the bus where Tia and Tony lean out of its window. He watches the bus drive away, an excited smile appearing on his face. A large stone house with a turret stands surrounded by trees. Three men stand somberly in a foyer addressing a seated man.
The moon is moving into Aries. Friday, it will near the middle of the transit.
The bottom line, Mr. Michael John?
The bottom line, Mr. Bolt, shows considerable indications of some advance toward your goals.
And what about the house guru? Do you concur, Ali?
There are profound vibrations, Mr. Bolt.
Are there indeed? Vibrations. My moon in Aries, mysterious words and phrases that have not added one red cent to my fortune. Wealth, gentlemen, is like flesh. It has to be nurtured and coddled.
The bald-headed man walks into the room, smiling.
Ah, Mr. Duranian.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bolt, but when you've heard my report, I think you'll understand. I have found what you're looking for.
Mr. Bolt looks to the other men, then back to Duranian with interest. Duranian smiles. Back at Pinewoods, the children play and Duranian pulls up in a limousine.
Wait here a minute.
Getting out of the car, he scans the scene, spotting Tia and Tony sitting on the grass by a goalpost. He approaches them. They look up, shielding their eyes from the sunlight. Recognizing him, Tia and Tony stand and Duranian smiles.
I haven't had a chance to thank you.
Was the man in front all right?
The chauffeur, yes, he's fine. But then you knew he would be, or you'd have had him get out of the car too.
The children exchange a worried glance.
I suppose this sort of thing happens to you all the time. Young lady? Knowing about things before they really happen.
The lunch bell. We have to go.
They run off.
Excuse me. Those two children that just left, I've been trying to think of their names.
Tony Malone and his sister Tia. A couple of weirdos.
Truck runs towards the house watched by Duranian. In his pajamas, Tony sits on the edge of his bed playing a harmonica. He looks towards a mirror. A black crayon levitates from the floor up towards it and slowly draws the outline of a building with a turret. Tia opens the door dressed in her nightie. She looks from Tony to the mirror and back again, her face stern having seen the floating crayon. She walks to the bed and sits next to Tony.
Suppose somebody else had walked in.
The crayon drops when Tony stops playing the harmonica.
Maybe
knocks. Pine Woods rules. Look.
Tia hands Tony the star case. The blue surface is loose.
Yeah. Must have happened when Winky knocked it out of Truck's hands. Can you fix it?
Tony pushes the blue cover, which twists away, revealing a black etched drawing.
It's a map, isn't it? Stony Creek? Misty Valley?
Tia looks away from the case, envisaging the same scene from before where three people struggle in water. One person is an old man. Through the fog on the water, a searchlight shines through. Tony looks at Tia's vacant expression.
It's funny, Tia, but every once in a while you get that look on your face. Like you're remembering something. I kind of do, but then I forget again. It's not someplace big, you know, like a state or a country, but more like a road map. I just don't know where. When I can figure out where this place is, we'll go there. Tony, what were you drawing? It's the place where those dogs are. They're barking now. Yeah, I know. I was listening to them before you butted in. And I began to visualize this castle. Tony, you can only visualize places we know something about. Or places we're gonna be at. I must have been drawing someplace we're going to.
They both look at the drawing on the mirror.
Soon, Tony. We're going there soon, and I'm afraid.
Tony plays the harmonica, and the crayon rises into the air, continuing to draw. Back to the stone house with the turret. Duranian speaks to Mr. Bolt, who sits at a trestle table in a grand room with high ceilings and arches.
Since the Malones lived in a very small village, I had little difficulty in finding people who knew the two children.
These insights, these sixth sense incidents, the postman, the schoolteacher, the woman who'd lost her parakeet. How do I know these are not the result of your desperation, figments of your very fine imagination?
I have sworn affidavits.
But people lie very easily. The very young can deceive the very wise.
I'm not lying.
If I'm in any way disappointed in this Tony and Tia, you are through here, Duranian.
Yes. I understand.
Then bring them here. You say they have no family. Well, now they do. You are their family, Duranian. You are their uncle. Do you understand?
Perfectly.
Alter records, forge documents, provide proper papers, whatever it takes. I will back you with every means at my disposal. Just bring me the children.
In Mrs. Grindley's office.
Well, I think there's no question, considering these documents your uncle has produced, that he has custody of you.
The judge signed those papers just today.
Mr. Duranian?
Uncle Lucas Tony. Better get used to it.
Uncle Lucas, did you tell Mrs. Grindley about the first time we ever saw you?
Oh, yes, yes, he did. The day the tow truck ran into your uncle's car.
That was a lucky day for all of us. Hmm?
You see, Tia, you bear such a remarkable resemblance to Mr. Duranian's sister that he's convinced you both are her children.
My sister, your mother, died 6 years ago.
Now, if you have any doubts, I'd be happy to show you these documents that prove he is your Uncle Lucas.
I won't have to leave Winky, will I? He's very smart, and he knows how to deal with dogs.
Did I mention dogs?
Tony and Tia look nervously at each other.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Grindley.
I'll see you out, Mr. Duranian. Children, don't forget your coats.
Mrs. Grindley escorts Duranian out of her office.
You have any feelings about this, Mr. Duranian? Only that he isn't our uncle. Must we leave, Tony? That's what these papers mean. We haven't got a choice.
The black limousine drives along a coastal road. Below it, the sea crashes against the cliffs. The limo pulls up outside tall wrought iron gates, and a bald-headed stout security guard walks towards the car.
A It's all right, Lorca. I'm just bringing through the children.
Duranian gestures to the back of the limo and the security guard looks in. Tia and Tony sit looking at him with Winky.
I'm sorry, sir, but I'm allergic to cats.
Let us through.
As the guard returns to his hut, Tia and Tony giggle. The guard flicks a switch and using both hands slides a lever forward, the gates slowly open. A sign reads, Xanthus. The car drives through the gates and winds along a drive. Tia and Tony look at a large caged enclosure.
Those are the dogs we heard.
Tia talks to Tony with her mind. They see two suited men in the enclosure training the many angry guard dogs. They approach the large stone house with turret.
There's the mansion. Just the way you drew it, Tony.
Uncle Lucas, what's Xanthus?
It's Xanthus, Tony. Mr. Bolt calls his house Xanthus.
Who's Mr. Bolt?
Mr. Bolt is my employer and your host. I have spacious apartments here. And thanks to Mr. Bolt's generosity, they've been enlarged and redecorated to accommodate the two of you.
Duranian walks the children towards the house from which Mr. Bolt appears to welcome them.
So this is your long-lost family. Well, you have a very beautiful niece, Duranian, and the most attractive nephew. You're Tony and you are Tia.
Mr. Bolt smiles and his butler steps forward holding two large ice creams.
Here!
She hands Duranian Winky.
Our favorite flavors, vanilla and strawberry. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, after that long drive, I'm sure you youngsters like to see your new quarters. Come with me.
He leads them to the house. Mr. Bolt opens a door and Tia and Tony walk in. They stand open-mouthed looking around the room. Tia smiles. A puppet stage with red and white canopy is in the corner, candy pink cushions, a stuffed big tiger and puppets surround it.
Wow, it's beautiful!
They run to a candy-striped bar with love heart chairs.
$200, cute. I must be dreaming. Tony, look at that!
Tia leads him to the puppet stage. Mr. Bolt glances sideways at Duranian, who watches the children explore. They look into a pink room with a white framed bed and pink canopy.
Look at these dolls and stuffed animals.
Whoa.
Tony looks into a yellow room. A foosball table and rocking horse are nearby.
Hey, Tony!
They run to the bar area, sitting on the chairs, licking their ice creams. Mr. Bolt and Duranian join them.
When all this is completed, Tony...
There's more?
Oh, yes. We haven't had time yet to install the carousel or the gymnasium.
The old tennis court is being resurfaced.
You can start your riding lessons first thing in the morning.
Oh, wow! We love horses.
Oh, I forgot.
He gestures for them to follow and walks around the corner to reveal a white gated area with a cat basket and a tall carpeted scratching post.
Winky's private quarters.
Winky leaps from Duranian's arms, runs through the gate and jumps onto the levels of the scratching post.
Look, I think he likes it. Really great.
Of course, you still have your schoolwork.
Your tutors arrive the first of the week.
Oh, Mr. Bolt, where are the others? Other kids. Neighbors, I mean.
There are no neighbors. Look out of the window. Go on. Look as far as you can see.
Drawing back the curtains, they look down to see a rocky mountainside with the sea crashing below. To their right is a pool with yellow parasols and sun lounges by it.
Mr. Bolt owns everything in sight.
Well, I could see the sky.
Mr. Bolt turns to face Tia. He looks angry and Duranian glances at him. The next day, a man teaches the children how to horse ride.
Now, I saddle myself because this is your first time out. But there's one thing I always want you to remember. You always mount a horse on his left side because, Tia, you better pay attention. You're going to be sorry.
Mr. Duncan, that horse over there.
That's old Thunderhead. He's never been broke. I sure don't envy the cowboy's going to try it. Now, Tony, I know it should be ladies first. But I think if you showed Tia how easy it is, you know, a little filly the size of your sister, sometimes they get scared.
Tia walks to Thunderhead's enclosure unnoticed. She opens the gate and the black horse rears up on its hind legs. She speaks to it in her mind.
Thunderhead, that's not nice. My name's Tia. And I want to be your friend. All right, Thunderhead?
Mr. Duncan goes to lift Tony onto a white placid horse but sees Tia.
Tia! Stay away from him! Hold on now!
Mr. Duncan runs to Tia but stops, seeing Thunderhead bend his head with one leg outstretched and the other bent. He stares.
Good boy.
Tony runs to Mr. Duncan's side and they watch as Tia runs and jumps onto Thunderhead's back, who calmly walks around his enclosure.
You know, I've never seen like this in all my life.
Mr. Duncan looks at Tony, who smiles up at his sister. Tia grins widely and Winky jumps onto a gatepost. Tony winks at the cat. From afar, Duranian watches. His eyes are wide and excited. Torrential rain pours down and Tia stands at a window watching it fall.
Tia! Come here.
She walks to Tony, sitting next to him. He takes out his harmonica, which he looks at inquisitively. Then he looks to a puppet which sits against a wall. Tia smiles excitedly.
Hey, Tony, why don't you try without your harmonica?
I forget how.
Come to think of it, you can do a lot of things I can't. Like working locks. In the way you can talk to me without moving your mouth. Maybe it's because you're a girl.
Tony starts to play and a light turns on above the green-hatted puppet on stage. His strings come to life and he stands waving at Tia. The puppet dances in time to the music. The puppet jumps off the stage onto the floor and a red-haired lady puppet in a paisley dress comes to life dancing towards the green puppet with her hands on her hips. Together they dance, moving closer. Tia gets up and joins the dancing pair, who separate, allowing her to walk in the middle. She joins in the dancing, hopping from foot to foot. From the side of the room where it hung motionless, a lilac elephant comes to life, moving through the air to join the dancing group. Tia bends down to stroke its trunk, and its tail wags happily. Tia stands, and the elephant dances in time with the others waggling its ears. A lady clown puppet, with a red nose and wearing a striped shirt and billowing grey trousers, leaps onto Tia's lap, who sits on the edge of the stage. Tony smiles through his music as it bounces in time. An elegant lady goose puppet comes alive. She wears an orange bonnet, an orange necklace with matching orange earrings, orange shiny shoes, and a white and orange fringe dress. Tia takes her hand as they dance. She reaches up and puts a finger into the open yellow beak, then watches the serene puppet dance, pointing her toes. A furry, big-eyed, friendly bumblebee puppet flies through the air, circling Tia's head. It shakes its head and flaps its wings. Tia smiles as it touches noses with hers. Tia moves back near the stage and continues to dance with all of the puppets. Meanwhile, Mr. Bolt and Duranian watch the unfolding scene on computer screens.
That's the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
Thank you, but we've a long way to go yet. I'm having more hidden cameras installed, and as soon as I have enough evidence, I'm going to show the tapes to the children.
Good. If that doesn't put them on my team, well, then we'll have to resort to cruder methods of persuasion.
Mr. Bolt looks back to the screens with a determined expression. Later in bed, Tia lies motionless, staring up at the ceiling.
Tia? Tia? Tia, what's the matter?
Oh, everything. And nothing. I mean, maybe it's because we've gotten everything we've ever wanted. More, even. It's... I don't know. It just doesn't leave us anything to wish for. Is that it?
I think so. Tony, we've got to get out of here before it's too late, please.
What do you see? Mr. Bolt. And he's mean. He's never gonna let us go, Tony.
You're not always right about things like this, Tia. And I think this time... Well, this time I...
He looks up at her scared face.
You're right.
Tony and Tia sit at a long dining table with Mr. Bolt at one end and Duranian at the other. A butler walks past them holding silverware.
Well, I've enjoyed this. Tony, Tia, you should ask your Uncle Lucas to arrange it so that you could dine with me more often.
Thank you, Mr. Bolt.
We had some fine, stimulating conversation. However, let us dispense with the kid gloves and acknowledge the fact that we're dealing with two remarkable children.
Mr. Bolt, I really don't think you should...
It doesn't matter what you think, Duranian. If these youngsters are psychic, it's obvious they've begun to see through us by now.
Don't lay on...
You have power. I've seen it. Now, I don't mean to ridicule those gifts of yours, as others might. I revere them. Do you believe that?
What power do you mean, Mr. Bolt?
He knows, Tony. He knows all about us.
I don't think we know what you mean, Mr. Bolt.
What you did with Thunderhead, and the marionettes, and the dozens of things I've seen in my TV console. I want to know, I want to be able to understand these powers. But that's impossible without your help. Now, you can make it possible. Why, you could walk across a field and tell whether there's oil far beneath it. You could foresee a revolution, a natural disaster.
Please, Mr. Bolt, you're too excited. You're going to make yourself sick. You should go right to bed, sir.
Mr. Bolt looks warily at them, then concerned.
Yes. Yes, I will. Anything. Anything in this world you ask me for, I'll bring you. Just never leave me.
Not another word. Into bed. And Uncle Lucas, you look like you could use some extra sleep yourself.
Duranian looks disgruntled, but stands to join the departing Mr. Bolt. The two men exchange looks as they leave.
You heard what he said. He wants to learn all the things we know. We couldn't teach him, even if we wanted to. We don't know why we do all these things. We don't know how it all started.
Tia remembers the same vision from before. People struggling in water, a searchlight coming through the mist, an old man waving towards it, and a large dark mass in front of them.
Tony, we've got to get out of here, please. But to what, Tia? Where do we go? Not to mention how. The map.
Mr. Bolt.
Listen a second.
Don't lay all your cards on the table now.
They're very cunning. I don't know the full extent of their powers. Here they could escape. But the chalet is an island in a sea of blinding snow. They'll never escape from there.
Nutty is a fruitcake. You see? We have to get out of here. I know. But there's all that high fence. And the guards and...
Children.
Duranian walks back in.
Finish up your ice creams. And I'll show you to your bedrooms.
Tia is in bed talking to Tony with her mind.
He's coming.
Duranian locks their bedroom door from outside. As he walks away, Tia and Tony get out of bed. They are fully dressed. Tia picks up Winky and carrying her star case, she stands in front of the door by Tony.
Come on.
Closing her eyes, Tia opens the locked door and they run out down the corridor. They emerge outside and scramble over the rocks.
So far, so good.
Come on!
They race up a hill, ducking under a fallen tree. Three suited men release the dogs from their caged enclosure. Pierre and Tony run through long grass and in and out of trees as the dogs give chase. Back at the mansion, Mr. Bolt is on the telephone.
Those dogs will ruin all my plans! What do you mean it's too late?
Tia and Tony run up the drive towards the front gates with the dogs closing in on them. They turn to face them.
Now! Dogs, stay! Stay!
Using her mind, Tia stops the dogs attacking.
Good dogs. Now there's some very bad men after us. Go get him.
The dogs turn around and race back towards the following security men. They panic and run.
There's still the main gate.
They're not going to stop chasing us even if we get past this gate. Call Thunderhead.
Thunderhead, remember what I told you? We're at the gate now.
As Tony plays his harmonica, Tia summons Thunderhead, who jumps over his enclosure's fence. Tony struggles to open the gates, which wobble but remain closed.
Lorco's on that lever!
I'll help!
Winky suddenly jumps from Tia's arms into the guard hut, where the guard struggles to keep the gates closed as he holds the lever control. The guard sneezes, letting go of the lever, and the gates swing open. Thunderhead trots up behind them, and Tony and Tia close their eyes, levitating up onto the horse's back. Winky jumps up to join them.
Winky!
They gallop away. Back at the mansion, Mr. Bolt is on the phone again.
Find them. I don't care how you do it. Chase them on a magic carpet if you have to. But I want those kids back. They rode out of here.
They're quite a challenge.
I will not rest until I get those children back. And neither will you. I'm a vengeful man, Duranian, and I don't make idle threats. Find them!
Duranian leaves, taking a suited man with him. Tony and Tia ride up to a sign reading, Veterinary Hospital, Dr. A. R. Russell. They dismount Thunderhead.
You'll be all right here, big fella.
Thank you, Thunderhead.
We'll miss you, Thunderhead.
Thunderhead turns to look at them.
Those signs are for us. We gotta keep moving. Come on.
They run to a forecourt, spotting a white camper van.
They're getting closer.
Duranian and a colleague drive a car. A man emerges from a grocery store with full paper bags.
Looks like you're taking a mighty long trip, friend.
Yeah, I figured to drive all over these United States.
Well, sir, a covered wagon pulling out of St. Joe. Didn't take near as much supplies as you got yourself here, Mr. O'Day.
You're sure one well-informed man, aren't you? Now, do you think you can hand me that carton without straining yourself, or are you just tuckered out from sticking your nose in my affairs?
He snatches the cardboard box off the old man, loading it into his camper van. Duranian pulls up alongside the camper van.
We're looking for two children, a boy and a girl, runaways.
Mister, if I did see them, I'd just as soon let them keep running. As long as they're going opposite to where I'm headed.
Duranian drives away, and the man climbs into his van, starting the engine. In the back of his camper, Tia and Tony hide in a nook between the cooker and the sofa. They're terrified. The van drives away. The van travels down a dirt track, emerging onto a deserted stretch by the sea. The man parks his van and gets out, breathing in the sea air and stretching. Inside the van, Winky rips a flower bag lying on the table above the two hidden children. The man turns back towards his van in time to see Winky walking underneath.
Well, what do you know about that? A drifter, huh? Hey, you're a friendly little fella, aren't you? Hey, I got some canned tuna for you.
He walks to the side of the van, opening the door to see Tia and Tony wide-eyed and covered in flour.
Hey, what are you doing here in my... Yesterday, when I was loading supplies, they were looking for two kids. A boy and a girl, you two. Well, let's get one thing straight right here now. I ain't no bus line. And I ain't partial to hitchhikers. And I don't like kids. And what's more, I'm a mean, impatient, selfish man. So come out of here and get on your way. Out, out, out!
He ushers them out of the van.
Come on, out, out. On your way.
Wait a minute. Well, it ain't right for no human being to go hungry. I'll make you some breakfast before you go.
They smile.
Now, don't get any ideas. I got no patience with kids. Especially runaways.
But it's just the opposite, sir. We're trying to find where home is. Excuse me, but did you see a black cat?
Oh, yeah. Yours, huh? Well, she's around somewhere. Go on down to the water and clean yourselves off.
He hands them a towel and they race to the sea.
He likes to bellow a lot. He's not really mean. You've got to be kidding.
Duranian's car travels over a huge stone bridge, the sea below it. He joins a police patrol where men are gathered studying a map spread out on the bonnet of a car.
Sorry, Mr. Duranian. No sign of him.
A grocer reported loading up one of these big campers. Around about the time the kids got away, they could have hidden in there. Did anybody...
Any one of you spot a camper?
I let one go through. The driver was alone. A big fellow, older guy, a zip-up jacket with fair-colored hair. Yeah, that's the one. He was in a recreation vehicle heading north on Highway L-38.
All right, north on Highway L-38. Now get out an ATV on an RV heading north on L-38.
Back in the camper van, the children eat breakfast watched by the man.
You see, Mr. O'Day, we don't expect to find their real parents, but maybe someone who knew them. He can explain things to us, and we gotta make sure Mr. Bolt and Duranian don't catch us.
Well, maybe that's the truth, and maybe it ain't. But I'm not gonna complicate things. I'm going to be on my way. What do I do with my keys? I know I had them in my pocket.
Mr. O'Day looks in the front cabin for his keys.
I must have lost them out there.
You should have a spare key, sir.
I know that, young lady. I am not a losing man. At least not till you showed up.
Sir, do you know a place called Stony Creek?
Stony Creek? Yes. Good fishing there.
If we get the motor started and clean up the back section, will you take us there?
Ah, so that's it. You're nothing but a conniving pair of undersized land pirates. You swiped my keys to make sure you'd get a ride. Give me my keys.
Sir, the engine will start now.
Mr. O'Day jumps as the van springs to life. Tony and Tia look at each other knowingly. Winky jumps through the window holding the key in her mouth, and Mr. O'Day gives in to a smile.
All right. You go back there and you clean up. Make everything ship-shape. I'll see that you get to Stony Creek.
Tia has her vision. It's a girl and boy who struggle in the water with an old man waving to an approaching boat. Two figures pull the children from the water. One wears a yellow cagoule and another a red hat.
You just remembered something. It has something to do with the ocean.
Come on, come on. Go on back. Clean up. Let's get on the way.
Duranian is in his car looking determined. Mr. O'Day is at a gas station. He carries a bag of groceries and opens the door of the van to put them inside. He notices the pump attendant peering in through the window of his van. The attendant sees Mr. O'Day looking at him and hastily looks away, striking up polite conversation.
Sure is a nice day. Not with the prices you're charging for gas.
Scowling, the attendant watches O'Day get into the driving seat. Mr. O'Day instructs the children who are hiding under the table.
Keep real still. This fella's acting mighty peculiar.
Nobody can know we're with you.
Yeah, maybe not. Leastways, you'll be out of my hair by tomorrow. We should make it to Stony Creek by then. How much?
$10 even.
The surly-faced attendant appears at the window, eyeing O'Day suspiciously. He takes the money and watches the camper van drive away. He walks inside and picks up a telephone. Tia and Tony unpack the grocery bag in the van, amused by the quantities of milk and canned food.
Mr. O'Day, I think you bought too much.
Yeah, Winky can't drink 4 quarts of milk between now and tomorrow.
Well, if you two weren't joshing me about Aristotle Bolt being after you, we might be together longer than we'd planned. He's a powerful man. Motorcycle cop.
Tia and Tony turn round to see the approaching policeman.
That attendant at the gas station.
You won't get in trouble, will you, Mr. O'Day?
It's not me he's after.
The policeman drives alongside the van, gesturing for Mr. O'Day to pull over. He nods his consent and does so. They all watch the policeman dismount and approach the van. Suddenly, Tony reaches for his harmonica. The policeman looks puzzled as behind him his motorbike roars to life. Mr. O'Day looks at Tony with surprise. The policeman approaches his bike, which tilts straight, releasing its stabilizer. Then it revs, screeching forward and off the cliff. The policeman peers over the edge after his motorbike crashes down the cliff. Dazed, he turns to watch Mr. O'Day drive off with the children.
Ha ha ha!
On second thought, I might not drop you off too soon. I might be able to squeeze an honest day's work out of you. Take you fishing.
Deep sea fishing, maybe. Pitch you two against a half a ton of blue marlin.
Tia has her vision. The three cling to wreckage in the sea. A boat arrives and the children are pulled out of the water. Later they stand waving in yellow jackets with a man wearing a cap.
Tia, what are you thinking about?
About before. It had to do with fishing.
With Daddy Malone?
No. No, but we're on a boat.
A trawler.
Like Daddy Malone had. That's all I remember.
Every lawman in the county is probably looking for this camper.
That evening, Tia and Tony sit by lamplight at a picnic table by a river.
There you are. Some hot chocolate?
Thank you. Hmm?
What's that you have there?
My star case.
Here, let me show you what we found in the secret compartment. You see where Stony Creek is, Mr. O'Day?
Yes.
Well, there's a path that leads away from it, up into some mountains.
We think maybe that's where we come from. Somewhere in those mountains. No, I don't think it was that way. Not exactly.
Tia returns to her vision. This time she sees the old man struggling in the water, attaching the star case to her wrist.
Well, go on.
It's gone.
What kind of an accident?
I don't know.
In a car?
No. On the ocean. And someone helped me save my star case.
Well, who?
Well, whoever put the map in the star case hid it so well, it took you all these years to find it.
That's right, Mr. O'Day. Why would anybody do that?
Well, maybe waiting for you to get old enough to do something about it.
Like now.
Very peculiar, huh? I wonder how I'd handle you kids if you were mine. Well, maybe that's why I never married, huh?
But Mr. O'Day, you were married.
He looks shocked.
What?
A long, long time ago. And she was so pretty. And you had a little house.
Yeah, I can see it. It was white, with yellow shutters. And there was a big elm branch over the whole roof.
If Tony knows about people, he can see places they've been.
What else?
Well, your wife died only a few months after you were married. And you were so sad. You took an oath that you'd never give your love to another woman. Or to anyone. And you never have.
Emotionally choked up, Mr. O'Day walks away from the table. Tony and Tia turn towards him.
I'm sorry, Mr. O'Day.
The name's Jason. If you know so dang much about me, you might as well use it. Jason, you understand?
I like the name Jason.
We didn't mean to make you sad, Jason.
He looks to their sincere faces, then his temper fades away. He smiles at them.
Well, come on. Are we gonna dawdle here all night? Let's clean up here. Get some sack time in. We'll pull out of here a couple of hours before sunup.
Duranian's car cruises along. He is on the phone.
They're probably headed towards Longview. Do you understand that, Sheriff Purdy?
Mr. Duranian, $1,000 reward speaks mighty clear in these parts. You can count on me.
Yes, I'll do that, Sheriff.
Been a pleasure, Rio. A real pleasure.
The sheriff picks up his holster. Duranian and his colleagues drive along a forest road, spotting parked cars. They slow and by headlights scour the apparent campsite.
man, over there.
They stop the car, spying the camper van through the trees. They smile at each other and drive closer, turning off their headlights. Inside the van, Jason watches the sleeping children. Hearing a noise outside, Winky sits up. Duranian gets out of the car with his colleague who draws a gun.
This time, no mistake.
Winky jumps out of the window and scales a tree unnoticed by the two approaching men. Above their heads, Winky looks down before jumping and knocking the gun out of the man's hand. The noise wakes the children and they pull back the curtains to see the two unarmed men. As the man bends down to pick up his gun, Tia closes her eyes, levitating the gun, which turns on the men and loads. Fearfully, Duranian and his colleagues stay very still, staring at the floating gun. Jason looks at Tia, who has her hands to her head concentrating. He runs to the driver's seat and pulls away. Winky jumps back in the window. With the van out of sight, the gun drops to the ground. The two men run to their car to give chase.
Now listen close. We're coming into Longview. My brother's house is about 2 miles outside of town, up the North Road. His name is Hiram O'Day.
There's a car behind us, Jason.
Somewhere in Longview, I'll find a place to make a fast turn and a quick stop. You two jump out the side door and hide. You got that?
Sure, Jason. You watch Winky now.
Yeah. I'll keep going. If luck is with us, Duranian and his pal will follow me. Now you wait till he gets past.
And then we'll head for your brother's house, right? Hiram O'Day.
Don't lose him.
The van races past a sign reading Longview. Jason stops the van and the children get out, running for cover. Jason drives away just as Duranian's car turns round the corner, giving chase. Sheriff Purdy sits in a patrol car and sees the diversion. He smiles and drives in the direction of the children. Tia and Tony creep around a wooden outhouse. They glance around them before turning a corner.
Well now, welcome to Longview.
Sheriff Purdy leads them by their arm to his patrol car. Back at the jail, he fills out paperwork, the children in front of him being watched by another police officer.
6:10 a.m. Okay, let's have your names.
Tony Castaway, Tia Castaway.
They look at each other with recognition.
Castaway, huh? That's no name, it's a word. Now, your legal name is Malone, and don't go kid me about that. I think I'll let you see what line the law gets you.
Sheriff Purdy places the harmonica and star case on the windowsill, picks up some keys, and gestures for the children to follow him into a cell.
In you go.
Tia and Tony sit down on a bed in the jail. Tia returns to her vision where all images are perfectly clear. She sees her and Tony on board a fishing trawler docking in a harbour where a smiling, friendly welcoming committee tend to them, made up of men and women.
Tony, I've been thinking about why we both said our name, Mr. Castaway.
I think it might have something to do with us speaking another language. When the Malones took us in.
Another language?
That's why we didn't talk for so long.
You mean we had to learn English?
We spoke a funny kind of language. Uncle Benet spoke it to us.
Who's Uncle Benet?
Tia thinks back to her vision where her and Tony struggled in the water. An old man helps them cling to some wreckage debris but sinks down out of sight.
I think he died. Drowned.
What did he look like?
He had white hair.
I'll tell you, we don't want no panic around here, Sheriff.
Well, I've been in touch with Mr. Draney, and he's on his way, so
I'll be home if you need me, Sheriff.
Tia, we gotta think of something fast.
Having heard the sheriff's conversation, Tia steps up on a stool to look through the barred window. She sees a caged bear outside.
Hey, Tony, look.
Tony, that bear looks so unhappy.
They sit back down on the bed.
Tia, we need my harmonica.
Tia closes her eyes. As the sheriff inspects her star case at his desk, the harmonica rises up behind him unnoticed and travels through the air through the bars of the jail to an excited Tony.
Now open the cell door.
The door slides open. The children creep down the corridor.
When I get the star case, you run out and wait at the edge of the woods.
As soon as I free the bear, I'll be there.
Tia, how do you expect us to get any place with a great big bear?
Tony's counting on me.
But this is an emergency. Now come off it, will you, Tia?
We still have to get past the sheriff. Why don't you start thinking about that?
Tony concentrates and rises into the air, peering through the high metal bars into the sheriff's office, who sits feet up at his desk, inspecting the star case closely. Behind him, Tony sees a long green coat and a t-shirt and a beige hat hanging on a coat stand. Next to it, a broom is propped against the wall. As Tony plays the harmonica, the coat on its hanger lifts off the stand and attaches to the broom handle, forming a body. The hat soon follows, hovering above the hanger. A ghostly outline of a man is created, and the sheriff tilts his head at the slight sounds behind him.
Hey, what?
The coat sleeves touch the sheriff's shoulders, who turns and is horrified at the strange sight. He panics, trying to run away, and the coat spins around on the spot, its sleeves flaying out. The sheriff leans away from it, leaning back on his desk. The coat dances towards him, and the sheriff falls over his desk, cowering in the corner, holding a chair up to shield him from the bizarre onslaught. Using the broom, the coat person pokes at the hiding sheriff, causing him to panic more. Meanwhile, Tia concentrates on opening the main jail lock. As the door opens, Tia and Tony step into the sheriff's office, watching the frenzied attack on him. Tia laughs at the spectacle.
Get off of me!
Tia exits as Tony plays the harmonica more furiously. As he plays, the green-coated figure begins to blow up like a balloon over the cowering sheriff. The sheriff winces. The coated figure drops on top of the sheriff, who whimpers, and Tony picks up the star case smiling, joining Tia, who unlocks the bear's cage with her mind outside. Tony looks annoyed and pulls Tia away from stroking the bear. They run, the bear following.
I just hope we don't have to pass a zoo before we get where we're going.
Look, I know what I saw. And I say that there's only one explanation. That those two kids are witches. And they're from Witch Mountain. I want every available townsman to arm themselves and we'll divvy up into hunting groups.
Hey, Sheriff, what you gonna do? Chase them all the way to Witch Mountain or what?
But we'll stop them before they get there. Now you listen close and I'll give you the areas to cover.
Duranian approaches.
Those look like hunting parties.
They got away, Mr. Duranian. But we know what they are. Evil itself, we gotta catch him.
He's right, sir. They're from Witch Mountain Shore.
Hey, Sheriff, we need some more ammunition.
All right. We'll get him, Mr. Duranian.
Duranian looks concerned.
They've really got blood in their eyes. There's no use trying to reason with them now, sir.
Duranian and his colleague make a call from the car.
Security, this is Duranian. I want a complete check on a Jason O'Day.
In the woods, hunting parties with shotguns search around. The children and bear stop running in another part of the forest.
Tia, I know how you feel about the bear, and I think it's real neat too, but, well, a lot of people are gonna be looking for us. And he'll be safer on his own. Anyway, they might shoot him. Just for the sport of it. Look. He'll be safe there until tonight. Then he can move on when it's dark.
Maybe you're right. I'll talk to him. You be a good bear and wait in that cave. We don't want anything to happen to you.
Tony, his feelings were hurt.
They run off, leaving the bear hiding in a cave. Two hunting parties come across the cave and creep towards its narrow mouth, guns raised. Nodding, one man takes a torch from his jacket pocket and leads the way into the cave.
Watch it out!
The men flee as the bear walks out of the cave. Tia and Tony run down the drive where a sign reads, Hiram O'Day. Jason runs out of the house to greet them.
Are full of hunters looking for you. They think you're witches. Brother Hiram ain't home, but I'll get you some food and you'll have a good rest.
Looking over his shoulder, Jason closes the door.
There's a brother, Hiram O'Day, 244 Kay Hill, just north of Longview.
15 minutes. We can be there in 15 minutes.
Duranian and his colleague drive off hastily.
Well, we both came up with a name like Castaway.
I noticed that you two are very smart for your years. You really know what a castaway is?
Sure. It's like being shipwrecked and left on a desert island. Tony, I just remembered. Castaway. That's the name of someone we're supposed to see. That's funny. I just remembered the same thing.
But suppose you two are castaways.
Then it would sure fit things Tia's been remembering.
Uh-huh.
We were in some kind of wreck, Jason. And we were in the sea.
You mean like a boat sinking?
I guess. But if it was a boat, I don't remember where it came from. We had an uncle. Uncle Benet. He kept us afloat. And then he drowned.
Oh.
For a long time, we didn't understand anything anyone would say.
You must have come from some other country.
But we won't know all the truth until we get to the mountains above Stony Creek, like it shows on the map.
Which mountain?
Tia looks at Tony.
My brother Hiram mentioned that place to me in his letters. He said some strangers came and settled there. They kept pretty much to themselves. And nobody ever knew where they came from. You think they might be your people?
They must be.
Security, have you notified Mr. Bolt of our destination? Then do so.
Mr. Bolt is escorted by suited men to a small private helicopter.
We've just received communication from Mr. Duranian, sir. He's on his way to a Mr. Hiram O'Day's cabin in the hills north of Longview.
Don't just sit here, get going!
Yes, sir.
Well, when Hiram gets home, he's going to find his cupboard is bare.
In unison, the children leave the table and look out of the window to see Duranian's car.
Hey, come on. Come on, camera's out in back.
Tia! Can you hear me? We need another favor.
Tia, come on!
Come on, Tia!
Tia summons the bear, who starts galloping in a field. Jason shows them out the back door as Duranian and his colleague walk towards the house. The children run to the camper van outside at the back of the house and get in.
There's no way we can get by them without their seeing us.
The sound of the engine alerts Duranian and he runs around the side of the house to see Jason speeding past on a slip road. They run back to their car. The bear snarls at Duranian as it sits in the driving seat. Both men back away slowly as the bear chews on a seatbelt, its big paw over the window ledge.
I remember more. It wasn't just Uncle Benet who died in the ocean when our ship went down. A lot of other people died too. And those people, the people that live here in these mountains, well, all of us came from the same country. But on different ships.
Well, then you mean yours sank and the others made it to port, huh?
But Tony, it wasn't a country. It was a place.
Yeah, a place that isn't there anymore.
Castaways?
That's why my people call themselves that. And this was the emblem for where we used to live.
Tony holds the star case.
Two stars? I don't know no place named that.
It wasn't called that.
No, two stars. Because our world had two suns.
Devil stars.
Another planet. A whole other solar system.
Well then, it wasn't a boat. It was a spaceship.
Tony and Tia look at each other open-mouthed. They remember.
Our planet was dying. The only industry left was the manufacturing of spaceships.
Like ours.
And we had to find another planet to live on.
Well, then the other ships in your cluster landed here in these mountains, and yours didn't make it, huh?
I think we might have been the only ones on our spaceship to have survived.
Jason looks at them, and the children grow sad at this possibility. Mr. Bolt looks through binoculars at Duranian's car where the bear peers out and up. The men shrug helplessly up at their boss. The noise of the helicopter scares off the bear, who gets out and runs away. Duranian and his colleague get back in the car, picking up their radio.
We lost them again. We're going to go south on Highway 211. Why don't you search the north?
The campervan passes a sign reading Stony Creek, elevation 2,100, population 277. Jason and the children walk to the River Inn.
Not too many people around, are there? Misty Valley Cooperative. This is it.
They enter a building with a sign reading Misty Valley Cooperative Office. The office is deserted.
Maybe they've gone out to lunch. We'll wait.
Duranian's car approaches other stationary vehicles belonging to a hunting party by the side of the road.
Are you the Longview bunch chasing after those two witch kids?
That's right, mister. My name's Court. You guys putting up the reward or what?
Yes, that's right. Except that it's now $5,000.
$5,000, huh?
But there's a catch. I want those two children alive. I don't care what happens to the old man. They were last seen in a camper headed this way.
Those words got a mighty good sound, friend.
Any idea where to look for them?
Well, they're not around here, that's for sure. Maybe the next town up the line, Stony Creek.
They all disband and set off in their own cars. Mr. Bolt is brought up to speed via radio.
Stony Creek, we're changing course now.
Back at the office, Jason and the children are still waiting.
I sure had time enough for a lunch break.
There's something to do with the phone book.
They all look to the sideboard, and Tony hands Tia Winky as he gets up and goes over looking in the phone book.
Let me have another look at that map.
Jason picks up the star case as Tony dials a number.
Misty Valley Cooperative.
I was calling the Castaway family, and I was wondering if...
It's all right. Were you looking for Mr. Castaway?
Yes!
Tia turns to see cars pull up.
Watch it, here comes Duranian!
Is this Tony?
Yes?
Is Tia with you?
Yes, who is this?
Thank the blessed stars, we've been searching for you for years. Now listen carefully, everything must time out. Take the back door and go to Mr. O'Day's camper.
The three of them run out of the back door as a crowd with guns gather outside. Duranian signals the men toward the office.
Children, we want to make sure Mr. Duranian doesn't lose you. We have a plan that should discourage them from ever pursuing you again.
Come on, come on!
Tia and Tony stand still, hearing the clear voice in their minds until Jason hurries them.
Everything's all right, Jason.
You sure got a funny idea of what's all right.
Maybe Bolt can spot the RV from the helicopter.
The men scramble to follow the speeding van. Three cars give chase.
We've got a fix on them, sir. Robertson Canyon headed north.
Exasperated, Duranian touches his head.
There's no way he can lose us in that monster he's driving.
Close in on them.
He's not exactly crawling.
They're getting closer, Tony.
Tony looks behind him and pulls out his harmonica. Tia walks with him to a closed cupboard. As he plays, the cupboard opens, revealing a large bag of flour. It floats down towards the window, which opens, letting it out. Duranian's car swerves to avoid the approaching bag, losing a hubcap. The flour hits the car behind, clouding the windscreen. The car crashes off the road, rolling down a hill. Duranian's car gives chase again, leaving the men dazed but unhurt who climb out of the crashed car.
Very ingenious, Tony. But don't forget, we want Duranian to see what's coming up.
I don't understand, sir.
Well, we have something planned that will convince Duranian and Bolt that you're both out of their reach forever.
Mr. Bolt spies the van from his helicopter and they swoop down low towards it. Back on the road, the van screeches around the steep, winding mountain path. Winky falls onto his side. The helicopter flies parallel to the van with the two cars following closely. Jason sees the helicopter in his wing mirrors and looks shocked.
Understood.
Duranian's car follows Mr. Bolt's instructions and speeds along a higher dirt track. The car exits onto the main road up ahead, and Duranian and his colleague get out of the car, which blocks the road. Jason tries to brake, seeing the roadblock ahead, but the van won't stop. The van soars over the car and high up into the sky, Jason clutching the wheel in astonishment. Duranian and his colleague watch the flying van with bewilderment. The final car to chase crashes through a fence and into a lake as the driver stares up at the sky. Duranian gets back into his car and they tail the van from below. Tia and Tony join Jason in the front cabin.
I don't believe it!
It's what you call levitation.
That ain't what I call it. You two got powers beyond belief!
We're not doing this. This is something too powerful for us to do. Somebody else is making this happen.
Relaxing, Jason laughs and they look out at the green valleys below them. Up ahead, the helicopter continues to search for the van. Mr. Bolt looks to his left and straight ahead, then back to his left, seeing the van fly next to him. He frowns and blinks his eyes as if he were dreaming, then stares back at the van. Tia waves, holding Winky, and stunned, Mr. Bolt nudges the pilot, who sees them too. Mr. Bolt raises an eyebrow, struggling to believe what he sees. Thick white cloud envelops the helicopter, obscuring his view. Emerging from the cloud, Mr. Bolt is surprised to see the van is upside down. Tia, Tony, and Jason wave, and Tia points, laughing.
That thing's flying upside down. That's impossible. That kind of vehicle can't fly upside down. Not supposed to fly at all.
The pilot and Mr. Bolt look up, then down, to see clouds below them and treetops above them. Reality dawns on Mr. Bolt's face.
They're not upside down, we are!
The van lowers slowly to the ground and comes to rest on a grassy hillside, leaving the upturned helicopter in the sky.
We should get out here and wait. We'll never forget you, Jason. Would you take care of Winky?
Oh, no, Tia. Winky's your cat. No, it wouldn't be right for her to be with anybody else.
It would make us happy.
It sure would. And I think Winky would like it, too.
Well, maybe we ought to ask Winky how she feels about that. Winky, how do you feel about going around now with a crusty old man? Look, if you don't mind, I'd like to plan on... remembering you two as if you're my kids.
Tony and Tia hug him tenderly as he holds Winky.
The kids I never had.
Jason sees an old man walk out from under a tree and the children turn towards him. The old man begins to run toward them, filled with emotion. They look to Jason before running towards the man.
So well. Congratulations, Jason O'Day. You're a man of courage and compassion.
Uncle Benet, we thought you drowned.
Well, now if you know exactly what to say to a shark, he can be very accommodating.
Uncle Benet touches Tia's star case.
Ah, Tia, you never forgot. You didn't lose the star case.
We only found the map a few days ago.
Well, I knew when you were old enough to understand it, you'd find it.
It's good to know that they're Earthmen such as you, Mr. O'Day. If the stars are willing, perhaps some of the other children who survived will find men equally as kind.
There are more?
Yes, all with star cases and maps. So far, only Tia and Tony have found the way.
Well, now that I know what to keep my eyes peeled for, perhaps I could spot some of these surviving kids and bring them here.
Uncle Benet looks thoughtful. They hear a noise.
Duranian's car. I'll have to tend to Bolt's helicopter.
Stay and watch. You'll see how we came into this world of yours.
Uncle Benet runs back down the hill with the children, who wave goodbye to Jason. He stands holding Winky, watching the three retreat. Duranian's car pulls up on the ridge of the hill. The helicopter is still upside down and is lowered slowly onto its rotating blades, causing the body to spin around till it comes to a rest. Duranian and colleague run to the helicopter, opening the doors.
I'm all right. Where are the children?
From behind a cluster of trees, a giant circular spaceship rises into the air with a pulsating lime green light underneath. Tony Tier and Uncle Benet appear in a giant window, waving to Jason, who waves back excitedly, holding up Winky as he smiles. The window disappears, becoming a solid encasement. The spaceship disappears behind mountain ridges on the horizon. Jason looks back at Mr. Bolt and Duranian, who get into their car.
I should have known there was more than ESP with those two.
Yeah.
Their car disappears down behind the ridge where Jason still stands. He stares in amazement at the reappearance of the spaceship. It moves back towards him, then travels to the valley within the mountains, disappearing into the thick mist which covers it. Jason smiles widely.
Well, they're home now.
The End. Walt Disney Productions.